Hi, I'm Carrie Butler, and you're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. I have a special offer for my listeners. You can get my new course at carriebutlercoach.com/Broadway Podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
A penny who just couldn't stop the beat. Yes, with roller skates on her feet. A girl who loved her bees. A ghost is recently deceased. A real cool mom. A musical version of Tina Fey. Tina Fey. Come with me and fly. Fly. I am your host, Miss Carrie Butler. Together, you and I are breaking Broadway.
Hey, everyone. Today's episode of Breaking Broadway is a crossover with Oh My Pod, you guys. We had so much fun doing this episode, and don't worry. There's still lots of advice for aspiring performers out there. Hope you enjoy the show.
Oh my pod, you guys. I am so excited for this amazing crossover episode of the pod with the incredible Breaking Broadway's Carrie Butler.
Oh my pod, oh my pod, you guys.
My dream come true, Carrie Butler singing on the podcast. I'm so excited to meet you and to chat with you. I have so many things to ask you, but my first just thing that I ask all of my guests is, where are you calling in from?
Oh, well, during COVID, I moved out to the suburbs, so I am in New Jersey.
Which,
I don't hate New Jersey, I just miss the city.
Yeah. Are you far enough that you can like feel a sense of solace?
Yes.
Like apart from the craziness?
Yes, but I really miss just seeing all my friends, you know, like a street away and just going in for anything. Like now, anytime I get asked to do anything, it's like, okay, I have to figure out, am I driving? Am I taking the train? You know, all that stuff.
Of course. Well, oh my gosh, where do I even begin? I truly have been such a fan of yours for quite some time. I think my first exposure to you was when my high school did Xanadu.
Oh.
And then we did, of course, a deep dive. And I was like, this is the end all be all of musical theater was this show, which of course you were casually nominated for a Tony for. But I want to ask you about sort of the difference between being in more of like an obscure cult classic show like Xanadu versus something that's just so iconic like a Les Mis or, you know, like a Hairspray. Like what is the draw for you in terms of projects? Like when you are asked to audition for something or given a script to read, like what's the driving, you know, force for you?
Yeah, great question. And this is actually something that I try and like teach young actors. So, you know, when you get your first job, then everybody wants to put you in a box to be that. And so my goal has always been just to be a working actor. And to do that, I will take parts for less money or I will, you know, do things that people don't see me in so then I can get more of that and have more longevity. So I feel like my career has been kind of crazy where like I will be starring in Xanadu, nominated for a Tony as the lead actor. And then the next show I do on Broadway, I have a part where I don't come in until the second act, and I'm Brenda Strong in Fly, Fly Away.
Right.
But, mm-hmm. you know, obviously I chose that. I mean, I chose that because, like, I love that song. It's one of my favorite songs that I've ever gotten to sing, Fly, Fly Away. And I mm-hmm. love Mark and Scott. That team was incredible. So I really, really wanted to be a part of that show. And it's funny, with Xanadu, I did all of the very first readings of Xanadu when they were first developing in it. It was so fun. And, but again, like, when you're in a show, you always think it's amazing, but you actually don't know. And so the year I got Xanadu, I also got cast in like 5 readings of new shows, workshops, like Legally Blonde,
right.
Little Mermaid. I did The Rubber Bridegroom. I did a Wedding Singer.
Oh,
and
yes.
Xanadu. And I was like, you know, thinking I was it. Like, which one am I going to choose? Cut to getting replaced in all of them. I got replaced in Xanadu. And then Jane Krakowski did it because, you know, they want somebody with a name. And
sure.
So Jane Krakowski was doing it. And then when it was going to Broadway, she decided, or it didn't work out with her schedule, something that she couldn't do it. And so then they mm-hmm. came back to me. And so it's like, I always say, if it was my choice, I probably would have chosen The Little Mermaid because I'm obsessed with The Little Mermaid and, you know, it's Disney and I'm obsessed with Disney.
Yeah.
But Xanadu ended up being the best thing for my career. So I just think, you know, trust the universe where it takes you, and just your goal should always be to be just a working actor.
Just working.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. That is so funny. And that's actually, more often than not, when I have spoken to people on the podcast, they've said, you... the things that you think
yes.
are correct for you mm-hmm. kind of, it's, you know, sometimes it works out, but most of the time it is up to the universe
yeah.
and timing and being in the right spot at the right moment and just being open to the possibility.
Totally.
So that's, I totally agree.
And the things that you don't get are because maybe something better is coming along.
Absolutely. I mean, there's just... I've spoken about it again on the show, but my Broadway debut happened because of COVID. If people weren't sick, I wouldn't have been called to go on in Chicago.
Oh,
so like,
my gosh.
You know, silver linings out of that huge, horrible disaster was that, like, when Broadway came back and, you know, everyone was still masking backstage yeah. and everything, I got called the day of because they were like, we need someone. Are you in the city? Can you be here at 7 p.m.?
Had you already done it on tour?
I did the tour, yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Thanks, yeah.
Oh my
but
gosh.
It was, you know, those things where it's just about the timing.
Yes.
Is never, you know, everyone's path to Broadway is different.
Yeah.
And not just to Broadway. There's, I mean, you obviously have worked outside of Broadway in many facets, not only performing, but also you directed in Florida, which is amazing. So, tell me about the sort of like parallel life of being, you know, one of the most, if I do say so myself, incredible Broadway performers with these countless credits.
Oh my goodness.
And then also being a person outside of that, that has other interests and other things going on in your life. Like, how do you strike the balance?
Well,
or do you, I guess, is what should I say?
You know, I always think of that song from Baby, you know, I want it all. Well, you can't have it all.
Yeah.
It's really hard. I mean, mm-hmm. I do have 2 daughters. And I always remember, like, I adopted my first daughter when I was doing Xanadu. So it's like all of this amazing stuff happening at the same time, because Xanadu really was a show that took up all of my time because we were doing so much press at the
sure.
same time. And so here I am, a new mom and having the biggest moment of my career. So it was rough. And it's funny, having theater can be a good job for being a parent when your kids are young, because you could just spend the whole day playing with them. And I would really put in an effort to, even when we were in rehearsals, to take my daughter to the park before we started rehearsals at 10 a.m., you know, spend at least an hour with her in the playground. But when once the show opened, then I could spend, you know, like all day with my daughter in the museum or whatever, but I couldn't be there at night. And
yeah.
On the one night off that I could be there, she would cry if I tucked her in because she was so used to her dad tucking her in. So it's like heartbreaking.
Yeah.
just to not have, you don't realize like what a bonding time that is, the bedtime ritual, and to never ever
routine.
Yeah, never be there for that. And you know, I'm like old school where I never miss a show. And so that is also difficult because I miss everything. And that's kind of after COVID, I was like, gosh, I've missed so many weddings and even like funerals for people I really cared about. And because in the back of your mind, you're always like, oh, I only get 2 personal days. If I use it for this one, what if somebody really close to me dies? And then
what
I have
happens?
To, it's like you're doing this kind of crazy bargaining in your mind.
Yes.
So I'm really trying to focus on life events right now. and I do think when I get in another Broadway show, I'm going to say when and not if, because that is always in the back of your mind too. Like, am I ever going to work again? But I'm going to say when I get another Broadway show, I do think I will try and make that a little bit more of a priority than I have in my entire career.
That's amazing. I mean, there's just no denying that your track record on the B-Way is, you know, more of a heavy hitter than some are lucky enough to say. You just have like done so many different types of things. But something that I love about your podcast is that you seem so genuinely interested in what other people think and have to say, not only about the industry, but just about like things in life. And I think, you know, sometimes people can fall into the trap of not necessarily being interested in learning or taking on new information because they have such a huge resume, or, you know, they feel that they've done this, that, and the other thing. And so I would love to hear about what even inspired you to create your podcast, and then, you know, how you like go about interviewing people who are sometimes your friends and sometimes people that you might not even know.
Yeah, it's interesting. I do love doing my podcast because I do learn so much. And we are, as performers especially, I think we have to constantly learn and we have to constantly be in training. And now I teach. And even that, I learn so much just from teaching. So I'm not actually going to class, even though I love taking class. I would be going now. I just have 2 kids and I'm too lazy to go. But honestly, but through teaching, it reminds me of all the things that I should be doing when I get a script and stuff like that. So I love that. Yeah. So I started doing my podcast because I would constantly get questions on Instagram and I got tired of answering them individually.
You're like, let me just say
nip this in the bud and help people that way. So that's how I started doing my podcast. And it was really just for, because so many of my fans now, because Mean Girls and Beetlejuice, I have a whole new slew of tween followers, and they were the ones constantly like, is this your first Broadway show? How did you get here? I'm like, girl, like, no. I have been around. Like, but
read a book.
But so since that was my biggest question, I just thought, oh, there's a need for this. So I started doing it. And then through doing that, you know, I'm terrible. I want to get good at social media. I don't feel like I'm good at it because it is such a tween thing. My 12-year-old daughter is much better at me, and she will help me make my posts. I'm like, Mom, what are you doing? No, let me just, and she fixes my stuff in like 1 second. She's like, no, you need to use this font. You need to have this clear back, you know. But most of the time she's in school, so so I still have terrible posts out there.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.
Great expectations.
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
But so I interview people who are things I want to find out. So I just recently had this TikTok star, Emily Kristen Morris, and she has like almost 2 million followers on TikTok.
Insane.
And she's done Broadway. No, she hasn't done Broadway, but she wants to be on Broadway, and she's done like the Wicked tour.
Tour, yes.
And she also teaches voice. And so it was just really interesting to see. She only grew her following during COVID. So in that short amount of time, to be such an influencer. And I think, I mean, people haven't, performers, I don't think have really taken advantage of how much TikTok can help your career.
Yes, 100%.
And so that's what I look for my guests. I don't look for... I don't even ask my fancy friends, honestly, to do it. I ask people who I think can be the most helpful. And so I found Emily, actually. I didn't even know her, but I was, my daughter told me I should do those TikToks where you watch somebody performing, you know, like stuff you've done or something.
Oh, yeah. Do like a live
reaction. Yes, a reaction one. Yeah. So I was doing a reaction, and the first person that popped up was Emily singing Fly, Fly Away. So I'm doing a reaction, and meanwhile... This TikTok is horrible. Like, I look like I just woke up. I'm so, I'm like, oh, this is great. She's great. But so I'm not so cut out for her TikToks. But then I post that TikTok and then I look up Emily. I'm like, oh my gosh, she's actually a working actress. I thought this was a kid. I'm like, she's so good. Yeah. She's actually a working actress and she's a TikTok star. And so then I asked her to be on my podcast. And she's like, amazing. Oh my gosh, I'm a huge fan of yours. So that's kind of the random way sometimes I choose people. But it is about me wanting to learn more about the industry. Because also I'm not out there auditioning now so much. I do audition sometimes, but for the most part, you know, I have an advantage. People know who I am, so I don't have to go to open calls. But I feel bad for those people who have to get up at, you know, sometimes 3 a.m. in the morning and do it. And so anything I can do to help them. Yikes.
Which is so admirable, truly, because, again, there are people who would not have that perspective and would just think, you know, well, it doesn't concern me. But I love that you are, you know, concerned with helping and teaching sort of the next generation of people who are coming up in this business, because everything has changed.
Yes.
I mean, when you started in this industry, it was something completely different. And now that we have the ability to use social media, we have like so much connectivity virtually, it's a completely different thing. I mean, I just went through an entire audition process for a show that was completely online. I've never met any of them in person because they're British.
Oh.
So it was like a completely different experience than something.
Was it like Zoom callbacks? Or,
yes.
Oh, and so
which was just
how did you do that?
New thing.
Yeah. How did you do that? Because I always have trouble with that.
Yeah, it was.
Did you use your phone? Did you use your computer?
I used my computer. Mm-hmm. I basically did what I do in terms of just like a self tape, which is like, you know, the ring light setup.
Yes.
Like I tried to have like a nice enough background. Yeah. But this show is such that it's like very conversational with the audience. So I chose not to do it with like just a blank. Background. I actually just did it right here in my bedroom to make it feel more lived in and to make it feel more comfortable.
Smart.
And to make myself feel more comfortable because I was like, I want this to feel like a conversation. But then they were also really helpful in sort of a direction way because they asked me to play directly to the camera lens as opposed to trying to, you know, put somebody in the room with me.
Right. Yeah, so that's the tricky part on those Zoom auditions.
Yeah.
Because then I always wonder, should I be looking at my like the computer screen where it's the reader, or should I be looking like somewhere near the camera?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So that's like finding that balance. And I think it's going to be different for every audition. Yeah. And, you know, luckily we are in a place where like now it's like typically you put things on tape and then you're eventually seen in the room right. in person. Right. So you don't have to worry about that. But yeah. So just things like that, that I love that you are so excited to talk about those things and teach.
Yeah. People. Well, I had some really, really great role models. You know, in like my first few shows, like Harvey Fierstein, when we were doing Hairspray, he was like a mom to all of us, honestly. Mm. And he, one thing I took from Harvey was that he always stood up for the ensemble. So he used his power, the power that he had, not for himself, but to stand up if people were being rehearsed too much, if they were, you know, if we were doing Tony rehearsal all day long and then, you know, hardly even have a dinner, you know, if people are falling apart. He would use his voice to stand up for people. And I, so, you know, that was kind of my first big, big original show. And so I always thought, I want to be like that. I want to use whatever power I have to help others. And on that same note, I will say, like, you know, there's like controversy going on around equity right now. And I don't have any problem with equity at all. But if, even if I did, like, it's not for me at this point, you know?
Right.
It's for the people who don't have a voice.
Yep. 100%. And we can sit here and you know, have that perspective and totally agree. But we are also so privileged in the fact that we have already, you know, done things that we wanted to do. And we are the privilege of our whiteness. And, you know, there are so many other layers, too, that, like, all of it, you know, it's just an interesting argument that, like, we could dive into forever, but
right. But on the whole, it's there just to give us, you know, a safe working environment, breaks,
yes,
pay, you know,
pay.
Yeah,
absolutely, yeah. The ability to get into an audition room,
right?
Just
right.
Period.
Yeah,
yeah. So switching gears a little bit, I was. Of course, you know, when I knew that I was going to talk to you, I was like, I have to know everything that I could possibly know about Miss Carrie Butler. But in sort of looking at your history with theater, I sort of realized that many of the shows and the roles that you have had a hand in creating have gone on to either be revived or to be recreated in different iterations. I mean, you were the original Penny in Hairspray, then that became a movie. You were, you know, in Catch Me If You Can, which is based on a movie, but then, like, what else? I mean, everything, basically, like Rock of Ages is a movie. And now
Mean
it's a
Girls,
new Mean Girls
right?
movie. Yeah. So when you hear that there are projects coming up or revivals of things that you created, do you feel a sense of ownership over roles and shows that you were in?
I don't know about ownership, but I think there is a sort of gratefulness or honor that I got to be the person to originate that role and sort of a pride in a way.
Right.
You know, like Hairspray, I think is a great example because Penny, a lot of the stuff that's like in, that put into the script was stuff that I just did. And, you know, like I didn't know this, but my nieces went to the tour of, they saw me in Hairspray, right? Then they went to the tour of Hairspray and they're like, oh my gosh, Penny on tour was so funny. You know how your family is sometimes. They're like, Penny, she was doing like this puppet show under the Black Mountain. I'm like, I did that puppet show. I started that.
Right.
And so it's but the cool thing is that they just let me do whatever I wanted. And then it got written to the script. And so something like that is just so exciting that I am forever a part of wherever it goes. Just my little thing that I created is a part of the show.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really cool. And me and Marissa and Laura Bell are right now, we just created our own show, Mama, I'm a Big Girl Now, and we're touring with
it. Amazing.
So we just had our first concert in Utah, and it's been so much fun.
So tell me about that show. Is it like all songs that you three have like sung in the past? Is it, or is it like new
well,
stuff?
We are creating it. It's still a work in progress. I mean, but we're we want it to be more even like a play than just a concert with stories going through it and
fun.
A storyline. So it's been just, we feel so creative making it. And So it's a mixture of everything. For our fans, we do try and hit like some of our greatest hits.
Of course.
But we weave them into a story. And we kind of try and give behind the scenes stories of Hairspray, our friendship. And we have like the greatest hits of Hairspray in there too, but a lot of other stuff too. Like Lorbell, of course, does like an awesome Legally Blonde medley. So there's that for the Legally Blonde fans.
The mega mix.
Yes, the mega mix.
Incredible. Well, I would love to know too, like having such an extensive career and working with so, so many people, have there ever been people who have you've been just like starstruck by or like intimidated by, like walking into the room?
Always. Yes. Well, first of all, I mean, I'm obsessed with Bernadette Peters. And so I've never worked with her, but I've done the Broadway Bark. So I've met her before. She's always been super nice.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going on the Broadway cruise in March and she's performing. So,
oh my God,
I'm dying.
Oh my God.
I am like gonna sit in the front row for that show. I posted a thing like, do you think me and Bernadette Peters could be best friends by the end of the cruise? So that's my new goal. She's gonna be there, and it may be the first time I like have a real conversation with her in my dreams. That's what's going to happen, but we'll see. Also, my two like icons growing up, three actually, were Bernadette Peters, Patti LuPone, and Bette Midler. So I also was really intimidated when I've met like Patti LuPone. She's super, super nice to me. I've never worked with her either though. But I did the show The Best Man, and
yes,
that was a play. My first
as Mabel.
Yes, my first like play on Broadway, and the cast was James Earl Jones, Angela Lansbury, John Larroquette, Eric McCormick,
like
every Candace Bergen. I mean, the entire cast was huge stars. Michael McKean.
Yes.
So, I mean, humongous stars and me. So I was very intimidated.
I know.
I was very intimidated going into that one. And I went in and, like, full out. You know, I had already done so much work because I was like, if I'm with this group, I have to, you know, really step it up. So I did all this work beforehand. Later on, James Earl Jones, I was like sitting in his dressing room one time. He said to me, he's like, when I saw you in the room, I thought, oh, she's bringing it. I better step it up.
Period. That's insane. You inspired James Earl Jones to work harder.
Well, maybe he was just being nice, but he did say it.
And it will live on forever.
It will live on in my memory.
Yes. And on our podcast forever.
Another cool thing about James Earl Jones, he had his script out for the entire run. And he was constantly making notes in it. He would go up to Eric like months into the run and be like, I just figured out this scene. And, you know.
Oh, my God. I love that, though.
I know.
Because what a sign of a true actor. Like, it's never done.
Yes.
You're never done learning and discovering. That's so cool.
Right?
My gosh, that would honestly make me nervous, though, to have my script open next to me on my desk.
Yeah.
Like, did I mess that line up?
I had a scene where I would come in, but sitting between Angela Lansbury and Candace Bergen, and Angela Lansbury would just sit there and tell us stories about her childhood and things like that.
Oh, that's insane.
I know.
Dame Angela. Wow. Hey, you guys. So in the next section of this episode, we had some slight technical difficulties. So please excuse the audio quality and have no fear. Carrie Butler is still here. Back to the interview. Obviously, like in talking about The Best Man, I'd love to know if there's a difference for you in, because The Best Man being a play and being more of a like less of a glitz and glamour type of show versus something like Beauty and the Beast or Les Mis, this huge giant thing. Like, how do you, is there a difference in the way you approach the work for a show that, you know, could be considered more of like a commercial big show versus something that's more pared down and more actor focused and story driven?
I would say there is and there isn't. There isn't in that I will create a character biography for all my roles, you know, like probably 30 pages that of backstory, things like that. Mm-hmm. I'll do the same work, breaking down the script, things like that, for any kind of role I get. But, you know, the main differences, I would say, are between, like, comedy and drama, just knowing the differences there. And also, so the difference between playing something that's a beloved movie and something that's completely original.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference is whether your part is, you know, etched in everyone's memory. So
sure.
So playing Belle, I'm not gonna take a lot of chances with that, you know. I'm not gonna disappoint those children. I'm gonna go into my Belle voice and, oh, Gaston, you are positively primeval. and or like doing Xanadu, I start out making it completely my own, so it comes from an authentic place mm-hmm. inside of me. I don't watch the movies for the shows. Then I go back after I know how I'm connected to the show and to the part. Then later on, I'll go back and watch the movie. So I watch the movie, you know, way into rehearsals. And then I look for things that I can pick out that will charm the audience or, you know, be Easter eggs in a way.
Sure.
For the audience to see. So like, I noticed, say, Olivia Newton-John just doing her whispery voice so much. So then I would do, you know, back at me, and just exaggerate yeah. the things that from the movie that yeah. people would like. But it has to come from me first.
Mm, I love that. I feel like there's always an element of that when you are approaching a show that's been done by either iconic people or, you know, that is based on something like that.
Yeah, you don't want to do an impersonation.
Totally, totally. But at the same time, there is that level of like, I have to honor right. what's already been done. I have to honor all of the things that have come before me, which I think too, we could look at something like the new Mean Girls movie, which is like an adaptation of an adaptation. So we're like already like layers deep. And it's so interesting to like, you kind of can't even have an opinion necessarily on like, or like there just kind of can't be a comparison because now we're like layers yeah. deep. Like there's no one iteration anymore. Now it's just like, this is this person's interpretation of it and like, let it be what it is.
Yeah. You almost want it to be different at this point.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Carrie, I am just obsessed with you. You are such a treat. Before I let you go, I have a series of musical theater rapid fire questions that I ask every guest. Are you ready? Here we go. Sondheim or Andrew Lloyd Webber?
Oh, God. I'm going to have to say Sondheim.
Sweatpants or jeans?
Jeans.
Do you have a favorite musical?
Yes. You want to know it?
Yes, I'd love to know it.
Okay. I mean, I have many. Yes. But I'm gonna go with my first Broadway show, which was my favorite musical at the time, Blood Brothers.
Love. Do you have a least favorite musical?
No.
Are you a morning person or a night owl?
Morning.
Really?
Yes.
So many theater people are like, couldn't possibly be morning.
No, I go to bed as soon as my show is over. I like hit the pillow. Nothing else is going on after my
She's
show.
She's ready to greet
yeah,
the day.
If I'm like, it's an hour and a half show, yes, I get to go to bed earlier.
Could you think of the craziest thing a director has ever asked you to do?
Oh my goodness. The thing that's...
Whether it be in the audition room, the rehearsal room, on the stage.
Oh gosh, I can't think of that many good examples. The only one that's popping into my head right now is just in Little Shop of Horrors. I got asked to have like one tear streaming down my face at the end of Somewhere That's Green. And I did it!
And I did it! As if we're in a tight close-up. Golden Age or contemporary?
Contemporary.
Do you have a favorite role that you have ever played?
Penny in Hairspray.
Oh, love. Coffee or tea?
Tea.
what is the hardest show that you have ever done?
Xanadu. Just because or Rock of Ages, actually. But I'm such, I'm so uncoordinated. And we had to roller skate, obviously.
Roller skate,
in that show.
Baby.
And like, not just roller skate, but do tricks. And I also played three parts and had an accent. I thought I was going to die, literally. And I almost got fired, seriously, because I was so, like, I couldn't do all the things together for a long time.
And then you were nominated for a Tony. So, well, my last question for you, Miss Carey, mm-hmm. is a question that I ask every single guest, which is, what is one thing that you would tell baby Carey?
Oh my gosh, I ask my guests the same question. Not phrased that way, but yes. And so I'm going to ask you the same question. What would I tell my younger self? Okay, I know exactly. I would tell my younger self to stop worrying about what other people think. Mm. Because as soon as I embraced the things I was most embarrassed of is when I started working. So as soon as I was able to laugh at myself for being such a nerd, mm-hmm. instead of being embarrassed by it, that's when I found my comedy and what made me unique. So I think that's my main thing. As an actor, you can't be afraid of what other people think. You have to just be fearless.
Absolutely.
But I was very afraid, I would say, for at least the first 10 years of mm-hmm. my career. Very afraid of what, and you know, afraid to embarrass
sure.
myself. And yeah, you have to
absolutely.
Just get over that.
I love that.
Okay, so what would you tell your younger self?
Well, it's funny because I've asked so many people this on the podcast, and then I haven't ever really even considered what it would be. But I think, like for myself, I think it would probably have to do with gender identity and expression, because not just, you know, when I was a child, but even more recently in the last like 8 years, I've been on such a journey of discovery in what it means to feel like a non-binary person. And now more than ever, I feel so lucky to actually be taken seriously in audition rooms that I would never have been considered for 10 years ago. So I would say to my younger self that the feelings of confusion are okay. It's a journey for everybody. You're not alone, even though it looks and feels like you are. And then maybe even just to myself 5 years ago, I would say there's no reason to look at it as you are not enough of one thing to claim this experience. I think for a while, I didn't feel like I was like, quote unquote, trans enough to claim the sort of like title of non-binary, or to like tick that box and say, yeah, I prefer they, them versus he, him, or like she is like out of the question because I have a beard. So no one would ever take that seriously. And like, yeah, telling myself this is for you. It's not about uh-huh. other people and what they need or what they think. That's what I would say.
Good. What about, do you have any advice for people, you know, kind of starting out in the business?
Yeah, I would say, well, two things. I would say number one is do what you think is best. There are going to be a million people telling you, well, I think that you should do this, and I think you should do this. And people have a tendency to forget their own opinion, and, you know, honoring their own thoughts and ideas. So I would say, take things into consideration, of course. Take people's advice and ask questions and learn, but also know that you are born with what you have. You are given naturally an mm. intuition and a sense of self, and you should trust it. And then I would also say, don't take it too seriously, which sounds so cliche. And maybe it sounds like flippant and, you know, just unimportant, but I am so, so guilty of the perfectionism and, you know, like riddled with anxiety and audition fatigue and all of it. And it's like, you have to have things outside of this that bring you joy. It is, it is my everything, truly. Like, theater is what I live and breathe. I absolutely love it. But if it went away tomorrow, I have other things in my life that bring me joy and comfort and solace. And that's like, you just can't take it too seriously. It has to be something parallel that you can, you know, take a step back from if you need and still be able to survive.
I always give the same advice. I'm always like, have hobbies, have, because this business is too hard to just have your highs and lows be based on.
And I would say too, surround yourself. I mean, of course, we're so lucky in this business that what we do sort of creates families for us, whether it's like in one show or just like, you know, the same people that you run into every single week at auditions or whatever. You get to know people and there's feels like a sort of like built-in support system. But I always encourage people, especially kids who are auditioning for theater programs, to look at schools that will allow you to connect with people outside of the musical theater department, because it's so important. Like I went to the Hart School, which is a conservatory-based program, but at the University of Hartford. So I was in classes with Division I athletes and nursing majors and business majors and architects, and having conversations with people outside of that safety bubble of musical theater was so important for me.
That's really, really great advice, especially for creators, because you don't want to just have that one perspective.
Totally, totally. And I would say too, like, ask around and talk to people who are in other BFA programs and like ask what you're doing and what you're studying. And, you know, like it doesn't have to be your one training program that teaches you every single bit of what you know and what you do.
I have one more question for you, and we don't have to put this one in if you don't have a good answer, but do you have any like favorite theater companies or websites or things that you follow that you feel like would be really helpful for people starting out? Like, you know, off Broadway theater community that accepts people to be readers or something like that.
Yeah. In terms of like working and like job opportunities?
Yeah. Breaking into the business.
Yes, absolutely. I would say, honestly, just advocating for yourself in any way goes so much further than people think. And I, like, for example, I have been a reader for many auditions, and that came from me cold emailing casting companies, casting directors and their associates, and just saying, hi, I'm an actor in the city, and if you need someone to be a reader, I would love to do it. And then literally be behind the table. And so there are things like that, you know, you might not.
Who did you do it for?
I've done it for Whoa Chicken Say Casting for like many of their, you know, like regional auditions for Everywhere to a Con and all their beautiful, amazing theaters. But I would say that. And then there are also things, there are so many up and coming organizations that you can work for, like the Theater Advocacy Project. It's called TAP, T-A-P, Theater Advocacy Project. And they do amazing things to advocate for better treatment and better wages and equity and diversity and inclusion in the workplace and all of those amazing things. And I would say getting involved in something like that is a really nice way to feel connected to the industry that you are trying to break into while still being able to actually support yourself and pay your rent, baby, because that's what we're that's what we're all doing.
Yeah. That's great. Thank you for sharing that great advice.
Of course. And thank you for just chatting with me. You are such a delight. I've of course have heard nothing but amazing things about you, but I was so delighted when you agreed to do the podcast. So.
Thank you for having me. It was so great meeting you. I had so much fun.
Yes, so much fun.
Thank you so much for listening. If you would like me to come to your school or theater group and a masterclass or a talk back, please reach out at carriebutlercoach.com. If you like this podcast and want more episodes, please go to bpn.fm/breakingbroadway and subscribe, like, or share.
Together, you and I are breaking Broadway.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.